All right, we'll go ahead and turn in your Bibles to 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy chapter 3, this is our last Sunday in this series, not ever, by the way. This is our last Sunday in, I realized I really emphasized Sunday right there. That was not the point. This is our last Sunday in this series on the church, and really is a continuation of or part two of last week's sermon. And by the way, just a real quick note while you're turning to 1 Timothy 3, I do apologize, that sermon did not make it online. We had some last minute shuffling around in the sound booth, and Craig filled in admirably for us at the last moment, and I forgot to tell him to hit record on our fancy little device back there. And I didn't think about it until I got back with the little memory chip card to my desk to load it onto my computer, and there was nothing there. And I was like, I forgot to tell Craig to hit record. But so that's totally on me. So I apologize for that. But just to catch everyone up, we looked at the Bible's instruction last week on the structure of the church. And what we saw last week was that first and foremost, Jesus Christ is the head of the church. The church is His. He is the head, and we are under His authority. Now, there's a lot of implications there and applications there, but primarily it means that we, the church, are to submit to His word when it comes to how we do church. Right? We don't get to do church however we want to. It's not about our preferences or our wants. It's not about what we think might work the best. It's not about pragmatism. We do church according to what we see in the Bible. And we've talked a lot about that in weeks prior. Part of that is how we structure ourselves, humanly speaking. And here's what we saw. Was that the word says that the final human authority in the church is each congregation, is that church's congregation. And the congregation is given specific authority and specific instructions for exercising that authority in matters of disputes among brothers in Christ, in matters of church discipline, in matters of doctrine, and in matters of membership, both who can be a member of the church and who cannot be members of the church. In addition, the church is responsible for selecting and ordaining or prayerfully approving of certain men to hold two offices of the church that we see in the scriptures, the offices of elder or pastor and deacon. The office of elder and deacon. You see, while the congregation has ultimate authority, God has structured all of life along hierarchies. And if that doesn't sit well with you, that's because our culture is trying to flatten that. It's trying to flatten all hierarchies. And what they'll tell you, what our culture will tell you, is that in any hierarchical system where there are actual leaders who have actual authority, there will, by default, be power imbalances, and that anywhere there's a power imbalance, there's also a difference in worth or value as individuals. That's what our culture will try to tell you. There's a big problem with that for us Christians, and it's the Bible. All right? It's the Bible. For one, as we said last week, it is a key concept in Christianity that a difference of roles and functions does not equate to a difference in worth or value. Further, God has given elders and deacons to the church not to rule tyrannically, but to serve lovingly. And those elders and deacons only serve at the will of the congregation. Now listen, the elders do have authority, but it is an authority that is given to them by the congregation through their election to that position and is limited both by the word and by that church's own bylaws and policies. So, do I, as the pastor, have more authority than just an average church member? Yes, of course. But it's not mine over against theirs. I'm simply exercising the authority that they've given me to exercise, that you've entrusted me with. And listen, that's why there's a lot of things that makes important, but part of it is this. It's why it's so important that we have a plurality of elders, that elders and deacons function biblically, and why we must follow the qualifications for elders and deacons given to us in the Word. And what I just gave you was the outline for the rest of this sermon, so I will say it again if you're an outline person. It's important that we have a plurality of elders, that elders and deacons function biblically, and that we appoint men who are qualified to those offices. I had you open up to 1 Timothy chapter 3. We're going to look at verses 1 through 13. We're just going to walk through it here in a little bit when we get to qualifications there at the end. I intended that to be the whole sermon, but we had it didn't work out that way, but that's all right. And really, I'm preaching three sermons in one, so I'm going to try and keep it somewhat contained. We'll see. But we'll look at those 1 through 13 in a minute, but I hope you're open there. I want you to see that both of these offices, elders and deacons, are both addressed. If you look, if you have that ESV like I do, 1 Timothy 3:1 says the office of overseer. The office of overseer. The Bible refers to this same office several ways. Overseer, elder, even bishop, which we don't do that. We're Baptist, right? But we don't. But the elder, overseer, bishop, it's all referring to the same office and describes, and the Bible will also describe the work of the elder, overseer, bishop with the word pastor. With the word pastor, which comes from the Latin word for shepherd. Now, Baptists generally call the office pastor, and that's actually more of a job description than a title in the Bible. Now, it's okay. It doesn't matter. The title or the what we call it really isn't that important. But I'm just pointing out that when we talk about these offices, elder, overseer, bishop, pastor, we're all talking about the same office. For the rest of the sermon, I'm just going to say elder, all right? And then if you look down to verse 8, you see deacons likewise. Deacons likewise. Now, there's no word controversy in the Bible about deacons. It's just always deacons. Deacons. So the two offices then are elder or pastor and deacon. Now, as we said earlier, it's important that there be a plurality of elders. A plurality, more than one. More than one elder. We're not given an exact number. I wish we were, but we're not. But nevertheless, I do want you to see that when the Bible talks about elders, it's always in the plural unless it's addressing a specific one. When it talks about the church, elders is plural. I've got a ton of verses here that I'm just going to tell you about. You don't have to turn to all these. I'm just going to give you the summary. Eight times in the book of Acts, we read about the elders, plural, in the church of Jerusalem. In Acts 20:17 in particular, we read that Paul sent to Ephesus and called the elders of the church to come to him. Elders. So, eight times we read about elders, plural, in Jerusalem when Paul sends to Ephesus and he says, hey, I need you guys to come here. I got some stuff to tell you. He says, he says, let the elders, all of them, come. So that's indirect evidence. It's descriptive of the situation. There's more similar evidence to that in James 5:14 and 1 Peter 5:1. It seems to be the assumption of the New Testament that there would be more than one pastor. There would be more than one elder in each church. Two verses, though, are a little more direct. In Acts 14:23, we read this, and they in this situation is Paul and Barnabas, they were on missionary journeys, describing their missionary journeys. And when they had appointed elders, plural, for them in every church, Y'all hear that? When they had appointed elders in every church with prayer and fasting, they committed them to the Lord in whom they had believed. So on his missionary journeys, Paul would plant a church, and before leaving that church, he would establish leaders through prayer and fasting. He would establish elders, multiple elders. And then in Titus 1:5, Paul instructs Titus to do the same thing, saying, and this is important, he says this, "This is why," Paul writing, "this is why I, Paul, left you, Titus, in Crete." His purpose of leaving Titus there is this, "so that you might put what remained into order and appoint elders in every town as I directed you." So for the good order and structure of the church, there should be a plurality of elders. Now, first, Milton used to have this, and if you're thinking, well, I don't think we did, you did, you just called them associate pastors. You had lay associate pastors. There was more than one, and they served in that role. That's fine. Again, doesn't matter what we call them. It's the same role, the same function. And I'm hoping that we can do that again, that we can get back to that point where we can appoint lay elders to serve alongside me in that pastoral role. Now, when we do that, we'll have both elders and deacons. And it'll be important at that point that we figure out, and this will take some study and some work and some conversations, to figure out exactly what roles and functions they are to play and how we separate those. And we'll go to the Word on that, because it's going to be important that they all function biblically. Now, we talked about this some last week too, so I won't go into too much time on it, but it's worth reminding us of those functions. First, for elders, there are four major responsibilities of elders in the Scriptures. These are not original to me. They're from Dr. Hammett's book, the book that's really served this sermon series well. If you want to read this sermon series, just go read his book. Right now, I'm not just preaching his chapters, but a lot of this has come out of there. A wonderful book on it's called Biblical Foundations for Baptist Churches, and it's been super helpful. But he says this, there's four responsibilities for elders in the Scriptures. One, the ministry of the Word that occurs through teaching and preaching. Two, pastoral ministry, so that shepherding ministry, the shepherding and care of the flock, the congregation. Third, oversight and leadership, so they oversee and manage the affairs and ministries of the church. And then four, they set an example for the flock. They set an example for the flock. And we'll see that in the qualifications in a moment. But elders and deacons, but elders in particular, are to set the example in Christ-likeness and Christian maturity. And again, as we said last week, a good way to think about the difference between elders and deacons, even though this is a big oversimplification, is that the elders are responsible for the spiritual needs of the church, while the deacons are responsible for the physical needs of the church. Now, I'm not talking about a glorified handyman, right? There's other physical needs besides just fixing, you know, patches in the parking lot. Far more than that. Now, okay, so then what are they? Let's talk deacons. Here's the problem with deacons. I just let that linger, didn't I? I had to wake you up somehow. You didn't know where I was going with that. Here's the problem with deacons. They're not widely discussed in the New Testament. It's not really a problem. It's just something we have to work through. The best text that we have is Acts 6:1-6, and it is descriptive, not prescriptive. It just says, here's how deacons came to be. And so we got to kind of learn from that. And then the next best text we have is in 1 Timothy here, and it just tells us what they're supposed to be like. And so we have little evidence about deacons and what exactly their role and function is. So we got to pay close attention to that evidence. In 1 Timothy 3, we'll see that the ability to teach is the biggest difference between elders and deacons. Elders have that qualification, deacons don't. So I just take from that that deacons aren't expected to teach. We'll see that they can, but they don't have to. They're not expected to, as elders are. Further, in Acts chapter 6, verses 1 through 7, again, we looked at it in depth last week. We see that deacons were chosen by the congregation from among the congregation and were established so that the elders could devote themselves to prayer and to ministry of the word, and the occasion for their appointment was to help maintain the unity of the church. So from all of that, we can discern that deacons, their primary role and function is to serve the church and the elders by performing duties that would prevent the elders from the ministries of teaching and prayer and to help maintain the unity of the church. Outside of that, the Bible isn't overly clear on the exact roles and responsibilities of deacons. And again, Dr. Hammond's so helpful here, so wise, he says this: perhaps one reason why, in the providence of God, we are not given an explicit job description for deacons is to allow them the flexibility to serve in a variety of roles that allow the elders to focus on those things that most utilize their gifts and most match their callings. In other words, the Bible gives the church leeway regarding deacons so that they can serve both the congregation and the elders in the ways they are most needed, as determined by each congregation and as needs arise. I think God in His wisdom and providence said, hey, listen, there's going to be a million congregations. Let the deacons serve that congregation however that congregation needs. We're not going to pigeonhole them with certain little things. All right? Does that make sense? Yeah? All right. Very good. Now, in our church, we have a deacon ministry manual, and I'll just tell you how they're, what some of that says. I'm not going to read it to you, but just to give you the outline. Deacons serve through praying for various families in the church. They serve the physical needs of those families that they've been assigned, as well as any physical needs on the church campus. They're, like when we have a work day, they got to be here. Unless there's something crazy going on in their life, they need to be here. They don't need to be the first one sitting on the couch. They need to be the first ones here working and serving as deacons, so long as they are physically able. They make calls, they make hospital visits, they give rides to and from, they follow up on potential issues, all right? Now, we just had a deacons meeting last week, and we took all of our members, because we've had some change, right? Last business meeting, we voted in a lot of folks, and we unfortunately had to vote out some folks just for moving, and they told us, hey, we're not coming back ever. So, and so we did that, and so we took our new roles, and we made sure every member is cared for by a certain deacon. If you haven't heard from them yet, you probably will soon. Each of you, if you're a church member, has been given a deacon who is responsible for caring for you. All right. Now, let's get to qualifications, because not just anybody can be an elder or deacon. Not just anybody. And look, we're just going to get the most controversial one right out of the way. All right, y'all ready for this? Elders in particular must be a man because elders are an authoritative teaching body. And just a few verses before our text for today, in 1 Timothy 2, chapter 12, Paul writes that women are not allowed to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Now listen, it's not because of misogyny, it's not because of chauvinism, it's not because women are not capable. Absolutely they are. Paul grounds this, in 1 Timothy 2, you can read it, Paul grounds this in the order of creation. Adam was formed first and then Eve. Now listen, this goes back to the relational hierarchy that we kind of talked about earlier. It's not about value or worth or even ability. It's about God's created order for the church. Now, listen, men, that means we have to step up and be worthy leaders in the church and in our homes. I've seen this at work. Now, just give us a warning for this. The very first church I ever pastored, we had two deacons who were glorified handymen. That's all they did. When I showed up on Wednesday night, I met with the real leaders of the church, four ladies. That was our Wednesday night. That church just voted to stay open, and they probably shouldn't have. All right? So listen, we're going to the Word. It's not about worth or value or ability. It's about God's created order and established order for the church. Men, we must take that responsibility. We must. We must step up and be leaders in the church and leaders in our homes. That's elders for sure. Deacons, I'm going to be straight with you. There are compelling arguments that go both ways. Maybe we can go into those arguments on Wednesday night. It's sermon discussion after all. There are compelling arguments for women serving as deacons or deaconesses, especially if the deacons are serving in a non-authoritative way. Now, this has gotten twisted a bit because many, many deacon bodies in Baptist churches are authoritative bodies. And I think we've missed the mark there historically. And so my hope for us as a church is that we are able to have a true eldership and true deacons. Maybe we'll dive more into that on Wednesday night. All right. That being said, let's look at the other qualifications. And I hope what you notice is how ordinary they are. In fact, one noted pastor and author, D.A. Carson, said, "What's most extraordinary about this list is how ordinary it is." I can go ahead and tell you that the sum of the qualifications for both elders and deacons is this: be a faithful Christian. Love and serve Jesus and His church. Now that gets unpacked a little bit, and we'll walk through that. But that's it. Elders and deacons should be men who love the Lord. All right, let's see that in 1 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 13. And listen, here's what we're going to do. They're pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of these that I really have to tell you what it means, to be respectable. I'm not going to insult your intelligence by spending 5 minutes on what it means to be respectable. So we're going to read through it. I am going to make some comments along the way because I do want us to understand what's going on. And there are some disputed and thought about passages here. And so we will make some comments along the way. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to just have your Bible open to 1 Timothy 3. We're going to read through it. This is honestly just going to be kind of running commentary. I'm going to read it, make some comments, and we'll read it and make some more comments. All right? If you have, again, listen, if you have questions about any of this, I invite you to come this Wednesday night for sermon discussion. Verse 1. "The saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to the office of overseer or elder," right? Or elder, pastor, "he desires a noble task." All right, let's just stop right there. I do want to make some comments here. So the office of overseer or elder is a noble, honorable task, and one should aspire to it. They should want the job. We're not going to force any of you. We may see qualifications of you of being elders and deacons. We're not going to force you to be one. We don't force people to be elders, but if they do aspire to the task, they should meet the following qualifications. Now listen, these qualifications are not something you shoot for if you want to be an elder or a deacon. These are qualifications that the congregation recognizes in you and should recognize in you if you are to be an elder or pastor or deacon. To be sure, there will be people who aspire to the task who are not qualified. And some of the most qualified people will not aspire to the task. Lord willing, we'll have men who are both qualified and want the job. That's the key. And listen, ideally, they'll already be doing the work without having the title. Congregation, you're like, well, how does this apply to me? This is how it applies to you. You're looking out at everybody else and saying, who's qualified? Who among us could help lead us and pastor us? Who meets these qualifications? Who's already doing it without the title? All right. Verse 2. What qualifications? Let's get into them. Therefore, since the office of overseer is a noble, honorable task, therefore an overseer must be above reproach. Again, we stop right there. That is the summary of all the rest. He must be above reproach. In all of his life, the elder is free from accusation. He does not find himself in situations he probably shouldn't be in. He's wise in that regard. And he conducts himself towards holiness. Does that mean he's perfect and never sins? If the answer is yes, I'm just going to turn in my keys. But is he striving? Is he striving? Is he not given to silly sins that he should know better? Is he above reproach? Next one. The husband of one wife. The husband of one wife. Now, again, we're going to stop right here because this is included in the deacons and it's controversial. It's got some different, not controversial, it has different interpretations. This is not talking about divorce. I'm going to take a deep breath. That's how I was taught growing up. I've heard it. Just the other day I heard it. This is not talking about divorce. Divorce is not mentioned anywhere in here. Now, there are other qualifications for elders and deacons regarding their home life, so a divorced man may or may not be qualified on those grounds. But that's not what's in view here. The literal translation of the text is one woman man, or a man of one woman. A one-woman man. That is actually more difficult because it gets to the heart of the matter and who that man is and what kind of man he is. If a man is intentionally flirtatious with other women, if he's constantly lusting in his heart after other women, if he's got a pornography habit, he is not qualified. Regardless of whether or not his wife has left him for that nonsense. Give me a divorced man who is a one-woman man over a married man who is just known for being a womanizer every day of the week. That's what he's after here. A man whose heart and eyes are set on one woman. Whether that's his wife or if he's single and he's looking for her, but he's still chaste. And he's saying, that one woman is it. So listen, when it comes to being single or divorced, we would dig a little deeper with some of these other qualifications. But they wouldn't be automatically disqualified because they aren't the husband of one wife. They can still be a one-woman man. All right, let's roll through these next ones. We are going to roll through something. We're not going to spend all that time on all of them. All right, and starting now. An overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, a one-woman man, sober-minded. He must be sober-minded. That has to do with, I said we were going to roll through this, I'm sorry. It has to do with, that's not just, he's going to get to drinking later. It's not that he never has a buzz or, you know, it probably means you probably shouldn't smoke weed, but it's more like you're clear-headed. You're sober-minded. You think well. You think clearly. He's not given to just wild accusations and crazy thoughts. He's sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach. Right? Again, that's the one not mentioned in deacons. And in Titus 1, it's listed as able to give instruction in sound doctrine and to be able to refute those who contradict it. Basically, an elder can teach the Bible and spot bad doctrine and refute it. That's part of protecting the sheep from wolves. Verse 3 continues, not a drunkard. Right? So there's the alcohol one. He's not a drunkard. Not violent, but gentle. Not quarrelsome. All right, so you, when I read that, not a drunkard, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, you're not going to find him brawling at the bar on Friday night and then bringing his hangover self into church and then causing problems out in the parking lot. Right? That's not the guy. That's not the guy you want leading your church. He's not the one who's picking fights or stirring up division or in the parking lot or in church meetings or even living rooms. He's not that guy. He's not a lover of money. He's not consumed with making tons of money. He may make good money, but he's not consumed with it. His hope is not set on riches. Verses 4 and 5, he must manage his own household well, with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? Here's what it's getting at here. In God's design, the home is the training ground for church leadership. This goes for husband, or for elders and deacons. This one is mentioned in both, so we're just going to talk about it now. It applies both ways. He's got to be a good husband and dad. And in whatever ordination process that we as a church come up with, we'll interview their wives. And so long as they're able and it's not harmful, we'll interview their children. Here's the point. If he can disciple his children in such a way that they love him and love the Lord, he's qualified. Now, are we going to disqualify men if their children grow up and rebel? Probably not. Why? Because we're not going to hold a man responsible for the sins of his adult children. But if all of his children hate him, and all of his children hate the Lord, then he probably has no business leading the church. Verse 6, he must not be a recent convert, or he may become puffed up with conceit and fall into the condemnation of the devil. Two things at play here. One, pride is an inherent danger of any position of authority. Young men, especially young converts, are typically zealous for the faith. They show outward signs of being qualified to be an elder. They're zealous, they love the Lord, they're constantly studying the scriptures, they're out evangelizing, they're doing all of those things. And we think, man, that guy's got potential to be an elder. But you got to get that young man pride out of your system before you can serve the church in a position of authority. You need a little bit of experience under your belt before you're entrusted with authority. That's just good practice for the church. The second thing that is at stake here is that there is spiritual warfare that comes along with being in the ministry that a recent convert just doesn't have the tools to deal with. I can tell you, I've been in both secular jobs and ministry jobs, and there's no contest. It's not even close. The spiritual warfare that I've faced taking ministry roles versus taking secular roles. It's just not even close. And so why? would we put someone who is new to the faith under that kind of pressure when they don't have the tools or the experience to deal with it? So listen, as with all the other qualifications, it is good for the recent convert and good for the church to just wait. So may we identify them early as someone with potential? Absolutely. Instead of throwing them to the wolves, so to speak, instead we bring them along. We mentor, we disciple, we let them get a few years under their belt. Hey, and then after an indeterminate amount of time, again, this is just prayer and wisdom. We're not given specifics. After time, after prayer, after wisdom, then we begin to appoint those younger men as elders and deacons. Verse 7. He must, moreover, not only does the church look at him and think, hey, I think he might be qualified. Verse 7 says, moreover, he must be well thought of by outsiders. Which, let's just say, implies that there are insiders. So church membership, right? So some of you are like, church membership's not in the Bible. Yeah, it is. It's this part of it right here. So why must he be well thought of by outsiders? So that he may not fall into disgrace, into a snare of the devil. In other words, his co-workers ought not be surprised when he comes in on Monday morning and says, hey, my church ordained me as an elder. Even if they don't know anything about the Lord, they should be able to say, that makes sense. If they say, you? That's a problem. All right. Deacons. As we read through the deacons here in verses 8 through 13, listen, we're going to see a lot of the same qualifications are just said a little bit different. I'll point out if anything is really different. Verse 8. Deacons likewise, just like elders. Deacons must be dignified. It's just respectable. They must be respectable men, not double-tongued. They're not a liar. They don't tell you one thing and then, you know, someone on the left side, my left, is one thing, and somebody on the right, another thing. They're not liars. They don't tell people different stories. They don't make two promises that are opposed to each other. Not addicted to much wine. Not greedy for dishonest gain. So again, not a drunkard or obsessed with money. Again, listen, being rich is a worldly qualification for a lot of things. How do you get on boards out in the secular world? Have money. Be rich. Be successful. That is not a qualification here in the church. It doesn't disqualify you if you have money. But it's just not a major plus when it comes to being a deacon or an elder. It's not, again, not necessarily a negative. How one manages their home, including their finances, is what's important. Verse 9, they must hold the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. Deacons don't have to be able to teach the gospel or refute bad doctrine, but they do have to know the gospel and be committed to biblical truth. Verse 10, and let them also be tested first, and then let them serve as deacons if they prove themselves blameless. Now again, this doesn't have to do with some certification process. There's no deacon exam. It's similar to not being a recent convert. Let them be tested. Let them go through some things. Let them experience a little bit of life. He needs some years under his belt as a faithful Christian before we appoint him to a position or an office within the church. Verses 11 and 12 have to do with the deacon's home. Again, just like the elders, it says this. Their wives likewise must be dignified, not slanderers, but sober-minded, faithful in all things. Let deacons each be the husband of one wife, a one-woman man, managing their children and their households well. For those who serve well as deacons gain a good standing for themselves and also great confidence in the faith that is in Jesus Christ. Again, the home is the training ground for service in the church. What we said in the elders section about being a one-woman man and having faithful children applies here as well. I won't re-preach that part. So listen, when the time comes, and I do hope it's sooner rather than later, we're going to look at these qualifications. We're going to look at the qualifications in Titus chapter 1, verse 5 and 9 to bring on more elders and deacons. But here's what we're not going to do. We're not going to rush the process. We're not going to rush it. I'm convinced that it's better to have too few elders and deacons than to have unqualified elders and deacons. All right? Now, let me close with two encouragements. One is this. All of us, men and women, should be striving to meet these qualifications. Now, women, let me relieve you of a burden. You don't have to be a one-woman man. All right? You do need to be a one-man woman. We should all be striving to meet these qualifications. This isn't some picture of the Christian superstar. This is a faithful Christian. Two, start praying now that God would raise up these kind of men to serve in our church. We'll only be better with more faithful men leading us. Amen? Ooh. Come Wednesday night if you got questions. Thank you, Leah. All right, let's pray.